Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. And this is a new book that I'm going to be reviewing today. Oh, I think it's pretty new. In the last year, anyway. It's called The Collapsing Empire by John Scalzi, the interdependency book number one. The first novel of a new space opera sequence set in an all-new universe by the Hugo Award-winning New York Times best-selling author of Red Shirts and Old Man's War. Now, that's just the top of the blurb from Goodreads, and already I found a few things in that which I might not have read this book if I'd have known about beforehand, but this is one of the things that I do. I'll often just see some buzz about a book and go, all right, I'll check this out. I knew it wasn't set in anything and it was a book number one, but it says here, the first novel in a new space opera sequence. I'm like, what's a sequence? Is a sequence like a series or whatever set in an all new universe? So I'm like, okay, so this is setting a book one, setting up a universe, and it's a best-selling author of Red Shirts and Old Man's War. Red Shirts I read, and it's like a fun single concept short story spread out into a whole book, plus some short stories afterwards, which are actually the good part of that one. And Old Man's War was John Scalzi going, right, so let's do my version of, Ender's Game, but instead of Ender's Game, have old people doing it. All right, that's what it's going to be like that. So, of course, that's being very reductive of John Scalzi and this book, but I think that is, unfortunately, kind of one of the main problems that I have about this book, is that it feels very reductive. I saw someone else say, oh, this is sort of like, it's an empire, there's lots of dukes and there's houses and there's lots of trade going around and each different house or guild head has a different planet or whatever, so it's a bit like Dune. And I'm like, oh, is this him doing Dune, is it? It's really not John Scalzi doing Dune. It's kind of like a Vorkosigan novel. Oh, yeah, that's the kind of vibe that I had, sort of Vorkosigan novel, but even that, this feels a little bit trivial to say, because that's this massive series and it's got all this goodwill built up around it and, all this history and there's different characters and there's loads and loads of that out there already. So when a new Vorkosigan book comes out, all of the fans will just lap it up. Well, maybe not all the fans, but it's from what I see, lots of fans lap it up and people are really into those characters and stuff. And that's kind of what it feels to me that John Scalzi is going for here. And that's great. I mean, if that's what people like. And this was a totally inoffensive start to a series. But it does feel very much like him looking at Vorkosigan's saga and going, hey, I reckon if I can, get a series like this going on, I don't actually have to come up with new stories. Each time I write a book, we can just spend more time in a world. This can just be a sequence of books rather than a series of stories. Is it a trilogy? I don't know. We can just keep milking this one. Again, that's me being very cynical about this right from the start, but I think I just came off this book feeling a bit annoyed by the length of it and that it's not a full story. The main characters are set up, but they don't feel like main characters that we want to, that we find out about them or we tell a full story in this single novel. Like, there's three main characters and we're like, oh, okay, this character does this and they set up and they do this and then at the end they... And then there's this other character here and they've got a job to do and they get across to here and then... And this other character, she does this and she gets to this point and then... And it's just sort of like, wait, if you're just going to end a book that suddenly, of course, I was reading this as an ebook, for reasons I'll get onto in a minute, but so I was reading it, and all the time I was like, right, that's the story seemed to have finished about halfway through. And now what can happen? There's not enough time, or like three quarters of the way through or something, but there's not enough time to actually resolve the story by the end. And as I was getting closer and closer to the end of the story, sure, there was a little bit of action, there's a little bit of intrigue, there's a little bit of, oh, how will this person get out of this situation? But at all this time, I was thinking, this isn't going to be the end of the story, isn't it? And nope, not really an end to the story. So that's why now reading this top of this blurb, it's the first novel of a space opera sequence. And I just don't know what a space opera sequence is meant to be. Is it a series of novels? Well, I guess if this is what a novel is in this sequence, in this series, whatever it is, I'm not entirely sure I'm going to be satisfied with them. And then it's set in an all-new universe. It's like, well, yeah, like, aren't all Aren't all science fiction books set in new universes, except if they're in a series, except if it's like the second book or a third book of a trilogy? So that this is sort of like a sequence of novels, isn't a series, but then it's set in a universe rather than the first book of a trilogy. It feels like this book is one that can run and run and run and never actually have any endings to the story. Excuse me, I need a quick drink. So, yeah, so let's get into this. The universe that this book is set in isn't a universe. It's an empire which is, you know, collapsing. Well, that's, of course, the name of the book. But the empire is called the Interdependency, the interdependent entities of the church, the empire, the guilds, and all of these different things are controlled by someone who is at the top of this. And the reason why this has been set up, or the reason stated in the book that this empire has been set up, is that for various reasons, all these different planets, I think there's sort of like 48 planets or something, I can't remember, a number of planets, dozens of planets, have all lost contact with Earth, and they need to survive among themselves, and like the trading families kind of take over, and by assigning each other, or assigning different trade monopolies, like only this company can trade this kind of fruit, and only this company can build ships, and only this family, and all the companies like families, so, and only this family can do this kind of thing, and only this family can do that kind of thing. It means that none of the individual places, individual planets, are self-sufficient, so they have to rely on each other to keep surviving, and they have to rely on each other to get all the trade backwards and forwards and stuff like that. So it's kind of an enforced peace, enforced trade, enforced everything to make sure everyone is running smoothly. And it means that if only one small family is the one that can provide, I don't know, wheat or bread or, you know, certain kind of fuel or certain kind of this or certain kind of that, it means that they're, no matter how small they are, they're always going to be important and everyone can get along. And there's like a bit of religion in there as well. And there's the Empress, or sorry, not the Emperor, not the Empress, but the Emprox with an X on the end, meaning gender-neutral Emprox, which actually I quite enjoyed that use of a X on the end to mean gender-neutral thing. It could have been, like, in the same way that it's either a king or a queen, but you don't want to keep switching backwards. You don't want to keep switching the national anthem to from God Save the King to God Save the Queen, and oh, now we're back to God Save the King again. Oh, no, back to the King. So you just give it a gender-neutral supreme title, the Emprox, and works pretty well. So that's kind of the setup. Oh, the reason why they're cut off from Earth is that I made a note here. There's the flow, and the flow is the big thing in this book. Now, for scientifically, in its scientific explanation ideas, the flow is like trade winds, but sort of like interstellar trade winds, which make you go faster than light, but it's kind of like on different dimensions bubbling up through the space-time, and if you latch onto these things, you can get dragged to other planets, and the flow goes in single directions round. So I'm thinking, I'm just on a cruise ship at the moment, sailing up the coast of Norway, and here we get the flows coming up. The reason why these places stay ice free a lot of the way up here, even in the winter, is because of the Gulf Stream and the North Atlantic flow and stuff like that. But it only goes one direction, and then if you can't sail back across it, you've got to then go sail down the coast, and then they're like, you know, these triangular trade winds that you get across the North Atlantic. That seems to be what's going on here. However, from a narrative point of view, these might as well be one-way wormholes, and you can only go one way through these wormholes. So if you want to go to this planet, you've got to go that planet, that planet, that planet, get to this planet, and then you can go all the way back to the first planet again, and that's just the trade route. So these are kind of like, the flow is kind of narratively wormhole trade routes, but let's talk them about them, trade winds. And there's issues with the flow. The flow might be breaking down, and because the flow is breaking down, and that's what this entire empire is based on, that's why the empire might start collapsing. And so yeah, this has happened before. We've lost a planet before. Actually, this entire place got disconnected from Earth, so there is no Earth, and there's only one planet which has got open air, and humans can live in the open air, and that's called Edge. And all of the action in this book takes place on the planet of Edge, which is at the end of the trade. No, it's called End. Yeah, that's what, not Edge. I'm getting mixed up with the other space opera. So, End is all the way over on one end of the trade route, and then the hub where all of these different trade winds come together. Let's call it London. Let's call it wherever global trade is, or interstellar trade in this way. That's where the Emprox is, and that's who controls that system and controls. They've got the bridge building guild, or the bridge building monopoly, and everything starts and ends there, and that's where the most powerful people are. So that's kind of the setup to it, which means it's one of those books where, like, space opera-y kind of thing, sort of like based very much on not our past or what trade was like in the British Empire or anything like that, but it feels very comfortable. There isn't any out there science fictional ideas. There isn't any anything societal which hasn't been done before. It's very much very, very comfortable. Everything here is turn off your brain. We've got an empire, we've got an empress, we've got some guilds, we've got some of this. And again, I kind of was always waiting for the new thing to be introduced, or the new thing, but it isn't. It's like I say, it's just very comfortable space opera-y science fiction, even to the point where as I was reading it, I was like, this could be set, except for that there's flow instead of wormholes or faster than light travel, it could be set in innumerable other science fiction empires or science fiction, space empires that I've read before. It's like, it's very much turn your brain off kind of thing, turn your brain. Oh, what's that going on my computer? Turn your brain off and just read along with the characters. And there are three main characters. They're Cardenia. She's the Empress, but she's an unexpected Empress. So even though she's the most powerful person in the whole galaxy, we can identify her with it because she's an unexpected Empress. And I'm like, isn't this just the very typical thing? That's the kind of like the normal trope for us to have someone who is the most powerful person, but we identify with them because they never wanted the job anyway. And then you've got the Kiva, who is a foul-mouthed, I think like a second or third daughter of a guild leader. And then Mars, who is the son of a scientist. Again, he gets a job that he doesn't want to do, but he's like the scientist, son of a genius kind of thing, and he's got to prove his own way in the world, whatever. And I'd say more about them, but there's not really very much to say. They're just sort of like, hey, guys, these are our main characters. Young people who are all good-looking and who all like sex, and being sex-positive is very positive, and it is very positive. But I guess being sex-positive, politically, yay, I'm good for it. And I know I've said this in previous books before, like, hey, these two characters, why do they spend the entire series mooning over each other, and they never get together, and they always drag it all out? And I'm just like, but they would have had sex by now. And then I read this book, and like the characters just have sex straight away, and I'm like, oh, okay, so that's really great, and that's the grown-up way of doing it, that if you were in this situation, you would have just had sex with them. You wouldn't have been like, oh, you're the one for me, and then have to save them from the bad guy, and then do this, and then maybe kiss by the end of the first book. It's sort of like, oh, no, they just have sex, which I've often complained, like, why don't they just do that? And then reading this book, and I'm like, oh, narratively not very satisfying. But satisfying that it is a book with grown-ups having grown-up relationships that are like, yes, let's just do the sex thing right away. So, some space battles. Some of the writing is, actually, most of the writing is good, but again, it's good in that, like, totally inoffensive way. The way that this book is offensive is by having the characters have sex and swear a lot. But if you're not offended by people swearing a lot or having sex, it's just all, just fine. It's just all totally inoffensive. There's nothing politically which will get anyone riled up. There's nothing socially that'll get anyone riled up. There's just nothing about it. I can see what he's doing probably with the different races in the book, that they're not mentioned at all, as far as I can tell. I don't have any like good pictures of what any of these characters look like, except this person's young and I guess good looking, and that person, had sex a lot, so I guess they're okay looking or something. And this is the Empress, so I'm sure she's good looking, whatever like that. But total voids of any character descriptions. But a lot of them have names, which like one of them is called is from the House of Lagos, and I'm like, so Nigerian then? And another one seems to be Wu, so I'm like guessing kind of Chinese, maybe, and another one has a name which it's sounding a bit, I don't know, Ethiopian or, I don't know, Egyptian or something like that, kind of Nile, Sudanese or something like kind of like North Africa Nile thing. So I'm thinking, oh, so these families are all from like geographical regions back home, maybe? I'm not entirely sure, but you know, it feels like the revelation is that, oh yeah, and all these characters are black, and I'm like, okay, fine, you know, whatever. So again, but done in a totally inoffensive way, or saving any like, oh, they're actually black and Chinese or whatever. But this is set thousands of years in the future, so maybe everyone's just sort of like a weird kind of olive brown color by now, and everyone's mixed together in such a way. But who knows? There seems to be a lot of intermarrying within the houses to share power and unite families and things like that. So the pacing is pretty good. I finished this book in about 2 days, but it is, like I say, just read it through, totally fine. What have we got here? Oh, the interlude. So halfway through the book, there's this interlude where we get the character. We get like the point of view from like the other side, from one of the antagonist's point of view. And it's the only time that we spend any time with this character. And this, I think, is by far the best writing of the book. It's the best part of the book. It's like a mini short story based in this same world, and somebody wants something, and they have a problem, and it lays out the issues like issue number one here, problem number two here, thing to get past number three here, like that. The person knows all the facts, has everything laid out for them, comes up with a plan, executes it, gets what he wants, and it just wraps up. And I'm like, you know what? This writing feels way, way better than any of John Scalzi's writing that I've read so far, except for maybe some parts of, like, some very early parts where he actually has an idea in Old Man's War. I remember Old Man's War is, like, the first half of it is kind of, like, the going through boot camp, like, interesting story that you get from, you know, like a Starship Troopers or like an Ender's Game kind of thing. The middle part is just sort of like, oh, I've got to have some adventures, I've got to have some battles. And the end part is sort of like, oh, it kicks into gear in the end part and actually makes me care about it. And a lot of this book felt like the middle part of Old Man's More, where it was just people doing stuff and having adventures or doing whatever. But, like, actually someone having a character moment by doing something. You know, like, I'm not just reading about characters saying things or seeing things or learning things. I'm getting to know someone by them doing something. And the writing felt a bit more like Ian M. Banks or Peter Watts, much more than Lewis McMaster Bujold with the Vok Hosigan saga. And I'm like, why doesn't he do the whole book like this? And I understand why he doesn't do the whole book like that, in a way, because that actually seems to take effort and take, you know, skill and energy and real characters. And the whole of the rest of this, it's really annoying, because apart from, or like after the interlude in this book, I was like, all right, so as a reader, I've learned everything that all of the characters know now. What is going to happen before the end of the book? And what happens before the end of the book is that all the characters find out what I, as the reader, know at that point. Because I know there's this one, I know that these characters over here know this thing, and I know that these characters over here on the other side know this other thing, but the different groups of characters don't know what each other knows yet. And by the end of the book, the only thing that's happened, except for some, like, you know, a little bit of action here and there, and, you know, it's like, oh, how will this person get out of this situation? But they get out of the situation just by luck, or by people doing their jobs. There's not actually story reasons for them to get out of that situation. And then, yeah, and then the only thing that happens is that one side learns what the other side knows, and the other side learns what the other side knows, and that's it. And I'm like, but I knew that, like, by the end of the interlude, so why did I have to read the rest of this book now and then end without anybody acting on it, or without anybody doing anything on it? Very disappointing. I mean, people do act on it, but not our main characters that we're spending time with. So it's kind of like, it's not a full story, and the way that it's written, it builds up to something which isn't a story. So yeah, what else have I got to say here? Issues, there seems to be maybe a plot hole. I'm not sure if it is, but maybe it's going to be revealed in the second book in this, you know, unending series in this universe that we're being put into, is that everyone is cut off from Earth because the flow broke to Earth, or the flow from Earth broke, or whatever it is. And it's mentioned that another planet, the flow broke, and they say, oh, we set up radio antennas pointing in that direction to see if we can get any transmissions from them to find out what happens. And I'm like, but didn't you do that with Earth? this whole entire section was cut off from Earth 1,000 years ago, but did Earth, like, just die off? But I think the point of this story is that the planets which don't just have space stations and people living under domes on planets, you actually have to have a full ecosphere, you have to have a full atmosphere and stuff to survive. Even if technology goes bad or you get cut off from the trade, you have to have this, you know, you have to have a, like, and that's Earth, isn't it? So Earth should have survived. So why isn't anyone pointing antennas at Earth or broadcasting at Earth? It seems to have just, like, what they say that happens to another planet that gets cut off from the whole interdependency. Why don't they do that? It says at the time we lost Earth, but I was never under sure. I was like, was Earth destroyed? Did everyone on Earth die? Or was it just cut off from the flow? It's like, oh no, it's just cut off from the flow. It's like, but shit. Anyway, maybe I missed that. I'm not entirely sure. And my final note that I made here was that some of the themes of the book, which is people ignoring science. And it seems like there's kind of maybe a comment on global climate change or something. But again, it's done in such a wishy-washy way that, like, or if this is a main theme, or if this is something he's trying to tease out about how people ignore science if everything is fine, that's okay. But I think if he's trying to bring it into climate change, like the change in the flow is climate change, I think it's kind of missing a point, but just it just doesn't fit together. Because climate change, the reason why people can ignore climate change is because it's a thing that really is only going to affect poor people. Because if you're rich, that doesn't matter, because you'll just be fine. And it's happening slowly enough that if you're fine now and you're the head of a multinational corporation or an oil company or something like that, doesn't really matter, because by the time you retire or die, that's when it's going to start getting really bad, and it doesn't really matter. You can just put it off and later board members, later people, later generations can deal with it. Whereas this, with the flow and the flow changing, it's something which equally impacts rich people and poor people, and it happens suddenly and immediately, and it impacts you right now. So there's no reason, there's no motivation for anyone to ignore the science. It's pretty much said, oh yeah, it was too much bother for anyone to listen to this and to go with this. It's all like, but is it really? Like, sure, that happens now in our universe with the science that's being ignored now in our universe. But if actually science is interesting or important or actually harmful right now, the world, our world and the humans don't just ignore science. There is political change, and there are new rules put in place, and the world does change around and does ban CFCs and does, you know, take, I guess, lead out of petrol. I mean, that's a slow one because, you know, there's other, you know, issues there as well. But yeah, we actually do ban different chemicals, and there is science which is listened to, and we, you know, and people do go, oh right, so, you know, solar energy, once the price comes down, it is worth doing it. Wind energy, once the price comes down, it is worth doing. You know, it's, there are big things that the world will change on, and the things that are ignored and the science which is ignored, that it doesn't impact the people who are doing the ignoring or funding the ignoring, and impacts people way later rather than now. So I wasn't quite sure about that part either. So of all of the things, I've got to the end of my notes here, but of all of the things that I've complained about this book, I kind of enjoyed reading this book, except for, like, having a disappointing end and it being totally, totally frivolous, and the writing being totally inoffensive and the characters being totally inoffensive. It was one of those books where I was, you know, on a flight. No, when did I even read? No, I only started reading. Like, again, I finished this book in like 2 days' time on the cruise. I just sat there, read it, spent another few hours. It's very, very short. I finished it up, and it doesn't feel like a full novel. It's very unsatisfying when I got to the end. But as I was reading it, it's just a page turn. I just go, yep. Just keep tapping sideways. Kindle app, just keep scrolling forward. And again, totally inoffensive popcorn movie. Well, it's not even, I wouldn't even say popcorn movie, because I actually think popcorn movies have to have satisfying stories, and they actually have to have satisfying action, and you've got to have a satisfying world building thing going on there. But again, something totally inoffensive. Nobody on Goodreads, actually, I should look here, but nobody on Goodreads is going to be rating this book less than 3 stars. Does anyone rate it 2 stars? Of all of my friends on Goodreads, one person rates it 2 stars. Everyone else is 3 stars and above. Because it is just so basically done and basically written, everyone's going to give it 3 stars and above. And nobody is going to give this book 5 stars unless they're already a John Scalzi fan. Because this book, wow, does this book rely on you already being a John Scalzi fan to give this book 5 stars. Or to be someone who is a Vorkosigan Saga fan and who is wanting just mindless, inoffensive, you know, empires, you know, trading fun stories. Vorkosigan, Miles Vorkosigan goes and does this and uses quick thinking and quick wit to get out of this situation. It's just that kind of stuff again. So it relies a lot on, you know, the people already being a fan of John Scalzi to, for this book to even be, even stand, like, if this was somebody's first novel, everyone would be like, nope. Got to give it, like, his editor would have been like, no, you got to actually finish off the novel. You actually finish a story. You can't just give us characters who, you know, we just assume that we're going to be with for another 8 books. 8 books, I'm guessing, like this. Like, what's he? It's a sequence set in a universe, and that's all it is. This is book one of a sequence set in a universe. So if that's what you're into, that's fine. Again, nobody's going to rate this book lower than 3 stars, and only fans of Scalzi or this kind of book are going to rate it 5 stars. There's, because it's so middle of the road, it's fine. So I'm going to rate it 3 stars, because it is total 3-star writing. Everything about this book is like 2.5 to 3.5 stars, averaging out at 3 stars. So, despite my negativity, it's a 3-star book, because there's nothing wrong with it except what it is. But if what it is what it is, it's a 3-star book. Anyway, I read this as a Kindle book because it says the audiobook was narrated by Will Wheaton, and I will never give him a second. Maybe I'll one day give him a second chance after struggling through his narration, his one note, one character, one voice, bland narration with red shirts. But this time I thought, well, I'll give this a go as a Kindle ebook, and it's totally fine. So it's fine not to do an audiobook. I do have another audiobook. What am I reading as an audiobook? MacKillop. What's the next book with MacKillop? Heir of Sea and Fire, the follow-up to the Riddle Master of Head by Patricia A. MacKillop. That'll be the next book that I review, because I'm about an hour from the end of that book. Another short book. Didn't realise I was there reading a very short ebook and listening to a very short audiobook at the same time, so I've finished both of these books up in about 4 days between them. So that'll be the next book. You can follow me. Oh, no, actually, let's quickly pop over to Goodreads and see what my friends and listeners of the podcast think of here. Lindsay rated it 4 stars. Scott rated it 5 stars. Carl Carlux rated it 3 stars. Fred Hughes rated it 3 stars. This is a very laid-back story by Scalzi. The pace is normal and there are no really smart-ass characters. It's a pleasant read, but not of the traditional John Scalzi story, I guess. That's fine. Lots of people were saying space opera, first of a new series. That's Rick rated it 3 stars. David Agronoff rated it 3 stars. It's a very intensely political science fiction novel. I wouldn't say it's an intensely political science fiction novel. I think it has some politics in it, but politics of empire variety rather than real life politics variety. Anyway, so lots of 3 stars and 4 stars. Colin Forbes rated it 4 stars. Just an enjoyable story told in an entertaining fashion. This is not hard sci-fi. This is action and dialogue-driven space opera. Yes, it is very much that as well. I did smirk at the use of the word cockwomble. I do remember that. It's very one-tone swearing in this. Lots of F-words and not a lot else, except cockwomble, yeah, I guess so. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm at Luke Burridge there. You can check out my vlogging and YouTube channel. I'm at Luke Burridge or / Luke Burridge on YouTube. Yeah, that's it. And follow along with my travels and juggling stuff on Instagram and on YouTube and things like that. So I think that's it. Oh, yeah, go to sfbrp.com, check out the episode list. And I've been doing this for over 10 years now, so you can check out all the books that I've reviewed and you can sort the lists and look back through the archives by book title. If you're wondering where the first 300 books are that are no longer in the feed, because a lot of places don't list more than 100 books in RSS feeds and things, so wondering where the first 300 books are, there is an archive feed which lists all of them, And you can get that right there on the Science Fiction Book Review podcast website, sfbrp.com, and see all of the archives there too. It's a bit of a pity that a lot of these feed readers don't go back more than 100 episodes, but you can find them in a big list, and you can sort them by author, sort them by series, sort them by rating, sort them by episode number, sort them by episode length, sort them by series, I think I said that already, or sequence, as the interdependency is. Anyway, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening. Oh, become my friends on Goodreads. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.